Shalom, everyone. I'm Monty Judah with Lion and Lamb Ministries. Welcome to our program. This is a special series that we're doing that we're talking about specifically the subject of the Great Tribulation, which is part of the discussion of eschatology, the study of last things. Now, in the previous episode, as I introduced our topic to us, one of the things that I took note of is when the average person starts talking about eschatology, start talking about the last things, they tend to home in on one particular topic, which is called the rapture. And in fact, that's what everybody thinks you're talking about when you talk about the coming of the Lord. It's the rapture. And in fact, more specifically, it's the pre-trib rapture they talk about. They talk about a rapture that happens before a tribulation period. Now, a lot of those folks, they think that the tribulation may be a 7-year period of time or a 3.5-year period of time, in which that the Lord comes back in the clouds and captures all of the Christians up into the clouds. They go back to heaven for a while. And whatever this tribulation is, it happens down here on the earth, probably to the Jews and not to Christians. And thank goodness it's not happening to Christians, because according to them, it's bad. And then the Lord comes back and everybody comes back and they rule and reign and we have the kingdom. When the thing that I shared with you in the first episode was that when the disciples came there on the Mount of Olives and they're looking back at the city of Jerusalem and they're looking at the skyline and they can see the temple there up above, and they had made a comment about how beautiful it was. And the Messiah had said, I tell you that not one stone will be left upon another. And of course, that was very traumatic news to them. They began to think, well, he must be talking about the end of the ages. He's talking about the end of the world. And they began to ask him the questions, what will be the signs of your coming? Or what will be the sign of the end? And he proceeded to answer. Now, in the Gospel of Luke, he focuses in on the destruction of Jerusalem. But in Matthew, he focuses in on the end of the age. That's what Matthew recorded for us. And the first thing he said was, don't let anyone mislead you. Okay, we got that. Don't let anybody mislead you. And then he proceeds to say, what are the things that are going to mislead people? He says, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and pestilences and various people, and people will be delivering you up to tribulation and kill you. Let's go back to the logic of what he said. These are the things that you will be misled by. That's not the sign of the end. In fact, he goes on to say, these things are the beginning of sorrows. These are the birth pangs. This is not the sign of the end. So what exactly is the sign of the end? What is he focusing in on? His answer is the start of the Great Tribulation. He references a very specific prophecy of Daniel called the Abomination of Desolation, proceeds to say this is what you need to understand. And then he says, for then there will be great tribulation. He go on through Matthew chapter 24 a little bit, and then he gets to the conclusion, and he said, now in the days immediately following the tribulation, you'll see the sign of the Son of Man coming in the clouds, and that's when we have the resurrection. And he gives two additional clues about this great tribulation of it. He says it's going to start in the season of winter. When he's talked about, for there'll be great tribulation, he said, pray that your flight be not on winter or on the Sabbath. That's a Hebrew hint for we're in the season of winter when this great tribulation begins. And if you go 3.5 years, that means the opposite season on the other end of the year. He said when he talked about his second coming, he talked about, learn the parable of the fig tree. When you see its leaf come forth, do you not know that summer is near? So the start of the Great Tribulation is in the season of winter, and the conclusion of the Great Tribulation is in the season of summer. Now, in particular, we learn from other verses that there's a very specific day count associated with the Great Tribulation, and I'm going to take you to those scriptures in here. We are going to, at this point, focus in on the prophecies of the Great Tribulation. We're not going to talk about the speculation of the rapture anymore. We're not going to talk about people's fears about coming to the end of the age. We're going to talk about the prophecies that have to do with the Great Tribulation. Now, I've got to give you a word picture. In fact, I've got a couple of word pictures for you about when we open this up. It turns out there are so many prophecies that deal with events at the start of the Great Tribulation, besides the abomination of desolation, that happen during the Great Tribulation, and then happen immediately in the days after the tribulation, that there almost every prophet speaks to this subject. And in fact, gathering all of these verses, all these different prophecies, and trying to put them in one place so you can grasp and understand all of them, I'm going to give you a word picture. It's like we are in a music hall, and there's going to be this giant orchestra that's getting ready to play for us. And you're along with me, and I'm going to try to explain to you, because you've never seen this orchestra play, I'm going to try to explain to you what they're going to do and how what they're going to play, what the music is going to be to this thing. So I'm going to walk you down where the musicians are going to be at. I'm going to show you some of the musical instruments. I'm going to show you the music that those musical instruments are going to be playing. These are like individual prophecies that have to do with the Great Tribulation. And the idea is I'm going to take you first into the violin section. Then I'm going to take you up to the percussion, where they have the drums and the kettle drums and the tambourines and things like that, cymbals. And then I'm going to show you the choir loft, where there's going to be a singing group that will also play with them. And then I'm going to show you where the trumpets are at, where the woodwinds are at, all the different instruments. And I'm going to show you the music they're going to play. And one of the things that you're going to learn by me showing that to you is not everybody plays at the same time. Now, they're all part of the same musical score they're going to be playing, but sometimes there's this instruments will play. Sometimes they'll play with that other instrument. Sometimes these instruments are in the background. And sometimes, especially when we come to the end of the musical score, we may see all of them playing at the same time as everything comes to climax in the musical score. Now, from that, you would know that they're going to follow the sheet music on there. Not everybody's going to be playing at the same time all the time. And you would assume, rightly so, that the way I showed it to you is not the way they're going to play. For example, I took you to the violins. So let's have the violins play all their music. They're done. Let's go up to the percussion. They play all their music. They're done. Let's go over to the trumpets. They're all done now. You would assume that it's all highly integrated and ties together based on how the conductor is going to play the music and have them play the music. So that's one word picture I want to tell you about all the prophecies of the Great Tribulation. It's a great symphony of many prophecies. And to understand the Great Tribulation, first of all, you have to gather all of the different prophecies. You have to get them laid down, and you have to look at the clues of the timing. When does this start? When does this end? How does that fit with this other one over here? And one of the minimum things you have to do in understanding the Great Tribulation is, I've got seven seals in the book of Revelation. I've got seven trumpets, and I got seven plagues, and I got a whole bunch of other stuff that's going on that's being said. How does that all play together? How does that fit? Now, the typical eschatology teacher has taken this material and he's laid it out in a linear fashion. By that I mean that he starts with one and he completes it, and he moves to the next one, he completes that, he moves to the next one. Like the seals all get played, and then they open up to the trumpets, and the trumpets get done, and they open up to the plagues. And that is what is referred to as the telescopic method of interpretation of end time prophecy. That's typical Roman Greco-linear thinking. The problem is the Bible is not written in Greek logic. It's written in Hebrew logic, and it's an Eastern logic where it's highly integrated, and it's cyclic. In other words, you may start with this, and then we'll slip over to this, and then you go back to that, and then it'll slip over to this, and you'll go back to that. In other words, it's very integrated in its approach. Now, that's one word picture to try to explain what the Great Tribulation is about and all of its prophecies. Now, let me give you another word picture that also illustrates another factor about trying to deal with this subject. Have you ever seen a really nice, sophisticated clock? You know, that's a timepiece and so forth. And you go to the back side of it and you open it up and you look into the inner workings of the clock and you see all these different wheels and gears and axles and how things are spinning, and some are going fast and some are going slow. But you understand that the mechanism of all of these things together is what's producing at the face of the clock the movement of the second hand, the minute hand, the hour hand, and what other special things that happen with that clock if it comes to a certain time. You see all the inner workings back with it. You know that every one of those is connected and everyone is important in the mechanism of the clock. That's some of the best I can try to explain to you, to introduce to you. If we pull all the prophecies together in one place about what happens at the start of the Great Tribulation, and there's several events, what happens during the 3.5 years of the Great Tribulation, and there's many events, and then what happens immediately after the Tribulation, and there are many events as well. To pull them all together is quite a task. To do that, to try to help that, to understand this topic I've done, I've created a chart. It's a two-dimensional chart, and that's exactly what it does. It only focuses in on the Great Tribulation. What is that thing that Yeshua was referring to when he said, "For then there will be great tribulation"? And the things that he was talking about in Matthew chapter 24, answering the question of the disciples, what's the sign of the end? Let me review very, very quickly. He did not say the start of the tribulation is the rapture. That is what churchmen and evangelicals have done. And clearly, by making that statement, if you buy that, you have offended what Yeshua said at the very beginning of the topic of the end of the age. He said, "Let no one mislead you." Let no one get you off of what does the prophecy say. Don't listen to any opinion of a man that takes you away from what the prophets have said. So we're going to look at what the prophets have said. We're not going to be talking anymore about what everybody thinks is supposed to be happening. To do that, I want to introduce this chart to you. This is called the Tribulation Timeline Chart. And by way of introduction, let me just share with you. This side of the chart over here in this shaded box indicates all of the things that are going to get in place at the start of the Great Tribulation. The very first item on this chart, upper left, is the abomination of desolation. Exactly what Yeshua said would be the sign that you look for. This is item number one. This starts everything else. You read this chart left to right and top to bottom, and you walk through the sequence of these events, and ultimately it leads to this area, which is called the far end, the days immediately after the tribulation, the very thing that Yeshua said. These are the events over here. Now, mind you, there's a lot more on this chart than was just in Matthew 24, because what I've done is I've taken Matthew 24 as the outline of what Yeshua did, and I have filled it out with all the other prophecies by the other prophets, what the prophets of Israel have said about this subject. And by the way, they've spoken extensively of this subject. And furthermore, what the apostles taught in the New Testament, and in particular, the entire book of Revelation. It is summarized in this chart, because the book of Revelation is the big book explaining what happens in the Great Tribulation. All right, so the way we're going to do this is I'm going to show you these scriptures. I'm going to show you the event up here, and we're going to review what does the scripture actually say. Now, I've introduced Matthew 24 to you. Let me show you a couple of other prophets who talked about this abomination of desolation. In particular, the Daniel prophecy and the summary. Here's the summary passage from Daniel. It's Daniel chapter 12, verse 11 and 12. And if you'll notice here, that's where that reference is at, because he talks about when you see the daily sacrifice stopped and you see the image set up, he described two events. That's what the abomination of desolation is. It's two specific events. The shutting down of the altar, the image of the animosai is set up. Now, they don't happen exactly on the same day. There's a slight difference. There's a slight gap. We're not really sure exactly how far that is, but it's in the same time frame. I don't think it's greater than about 30 days, and I'll explain that why a little bit later. But in any case, he goes on to say that this, when he answers from here, he says there will be 1,290 days. Now, that's pretty specific. Daniel has said in his book that the Great Tribulation is going to be 1,290 days. But we know there's some days immediately after the tribulation. Remember Yeshua talked about? And he gives a second dimension. Blessed is he who sees the 1,335th day. The difference between 1,290 and 1,335 just told you that that period of time, the days after the Great Tribulation, is about 45 days long. That's the difference of there. We even know the days that are these activities are taking place. Let me go ahead and tell you what is the end result. What does the prophet said is that joyous day of 1,335 days later. According to the prophet Zechariah, it's over here. It has to do, we're going to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Ingathering in Jerusalem with the Messiah. And for those of you who know the Feast of the Lord, you know that's called the Season of Joy. That is the celebration of the completion of the Exodus and the joy of being in the land, in the Promised Land. So we know what the blessed day is. It's already prophesied to be. So we know that 1,335th day is some future Feast of Tabernacles off into the distant future. 3.5 years after this all starts. This is in the season of winter. This is in the season of summer. Oh, by the way, when are the fall feasts? When do they happen? Trumpets happens in summer. Yom Kippur happens in summer. And immediately afterwards is the Feast of Tabernacles. And it's right at the edge of summer. Pray, you know, that's exactly what he said would be the season at the conclusion of this. So that's your basic introduction to, at the top line of about what this is. But let me give you a couple other verses that are told to us about the abomination of desolation. For example, in Joel 1, verses 8 and 13, it talks about the daily sacrifice being shut down, the libation being stopped, and about those that were serving the altar weeping because the altar has been shut down. A few verses later, he goes on and says, you know, sound the shofar for the day of the Lord is near. So it's the thing that's going to be initiating all of these things that are over here. Also, if you look at Daniel 11:31 and also Revelation 13:15, you'll see a reference to, again, the issue of the altar. Let's talk about this very specifically, because this is very powerful about understanding the Great Tribulation. Why would God focus in on the altar service and up on the Temple Mount as the sign to start the Great Tribulation? Well, my friends, it's always been about altars. From the very beginning, God has worked with man using altars. An altar is the table of God. And the Torah teaches us the laws of God that when you bring a gift, you bring it to his table. You bring it to an altar. And he does business with man at the altar. The altar has to be made in a very specific way. You cannot use stones that have been hewn by a man. They have to be stones only made by God. They're heaped together to make a great earth altar. They're encased. And then there's a special ordination service that has to take place. The law specifies this, of 7 days, of a bull and a goat has to be offered to dedicate and ordain the altar. And on the eighth day, the first day of the operation of the altar, he then began a morning and an evening lamb with a meal offering and a libation of wine. As long as those daily sacrifices are there, the morning and the evening lamb, God says he recognizes that altar is an altar set up to him and he receives gifts on that altar. If for any reason that daily sacrifice is interrupted, we don't have the morning lamb, we don't have the evening lamb, whatever, that altar ceases to be an acceptable altar to God for purposes of worshiping using the altar. The altar also represents God's ownership symbol of the whole earth. In fact, the very first words that are spoken over an altar after it has been established is from Psalms 24. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. The God that created the stones that are in this altar, he owns everything touching those stones. That means the entire planet and everything in it. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. It is the desire of the enemy of God. Ha-Satan wants to steal the earth and the people in the earth. This is the great conflict between God and Ha-Satan. It doesn't belong to him, so he wants to deny God having it. And so what he's going to do is he's going to deny the altar. He's going to deny God's ownership symbol. This is the thing that starts this whole process. A time of distress on the earth as the world has never seen before. Because at this point, okay, the enemy is now in full-scale attack, including us, and God is now in full-scale attack against his enemy and is coming back to win the day, essentially. For thus, this is the reason we have a great tribulation, a time of distress to the world as we've never seen before. The reason why Ha-Satan is going to come and want to oppress the saints during this time. Difficulty for all of us. This is the start of it. Now, if you look down here on this page a little bit further, there's a couple other things that are going to help set the stage. We got to have a couple of other bad characters show up, and they got to be ready to go at the start of the Great Tribulation, not the least of which is a false prophet. We got to have somebody the prophecy talks about in Revelation 13 that's going to initiate a mark of the beast for the people to show that shows ownership back to Ha-Satan and to him. And of course, the Antimessiah himself has to begin to emerge. He's got to begin. The Antimessiah and his prophecies you find down at Daniel 7:24 and also in Revelation 13 verses 3 and also 4. You'll find out in all the prophecies that the Antimessiah rises to power in the midst of 10 kings. Three of them get uprooted. The Antimessiah doesn't like them. He's got to remove them. The other seven then give their power to the Antimessiah, and that's how he comes to power. Now, there's something going to be happening in the world at that time in which that he's going to rise within that complex of leaders and rulers in the world, and that's how he gains power. He does not gain power because everybody loves him. This guy's called the son of perdition. He's the anti-Messiah. He's going to represent himself as God. And in fact, the image being set up is an image of him in which he will proclaim he's the savior of the world. And as fanciful as that may sound to you, that's what the prophecy says is going to take place. The Antimessiah and the enemies of God are going to deny God's ownership symbol, and he's going to say, I'm God, I want the world to worship me, and we're going to hand out a mark of a beast. All of these things are at the start of the Great Tribulation. Now, interestingly enough, I'm not sure exactly how much time it's going to take for this mark of the beast thing to be installed, but it's something that's going to be in the early activity of the Great Tribulation. You can see the verses of Revelation 13, verses 16 and 17 that describe that. And this is the work of the false prophet. It's not the beast. It's not the animosity that tells you to get the mark of the beast. It's a religious man. Now, interestingly enough, right now, everybody's talking about the mark of the beast. In other words, we're talking about who's the animosity. If they're not talking about the rapture, they're talking about who in the world is the anti-Messiah, and what about this mark of the beast? And everybody's concerned about it because the scripture's pretty emphatic here. It says if you take that mark of the beast, you've made a decision for eternity for you. And of course, everybody wants to avoid that. We don't want to do that. So that's the reason why there's a lot of attention given to that. Right now, the consensus is there's some sort of technology that includes an implant chip of sort, because the scripture refers to the ability to buy and sell because of something, a mark, a piercing that is in the hand or in the forehead. And that's what the prophecy talks about for there. Now, let me back up just for a moment and tell you a couple of other things that are going to happen at the start associated with the abomination of the desolation. One of them has to do with Yeshua warning the people in Judea, that's in Israel in particular, when you see these things happen, they must flee at that point. They must flee into the wilderness. And in fact, you can see that particularly in the verses, Matthew 24, verse 16. But look also at Zechariah 14, verse 5, and look also at Revelation 12, 14 through 16. They're describing something very similar. They're talking about something that happens to certain believers in the land of Israel. This is not worldwide. This is about specific people that see the abomination of desolation. They witness it. They're in Judea. And how they must flee, and God's going to deliver them. And it's a very interesting little segment of this prophecy because it talks about them fleeing and a Hasatan causing a flood of water to come after them to try to destroy them. And God does the miracle of the Red Sea in reverse. He opens the earth up to swallow the flood as opposed to the crossing of the Red Sea out of Egypt. It's kind of to the reverse, but it's kind of like it. And it's right there at the beginning of the Great Tribulation. And those particular saints, whoever they are, they're going to be delivered in a like a Red Sea event at the start. But again, they're not for all believers all over the world. They're specifically for those in Judea. And let me point something out. We're not talking about Samaria. We're not talking about the Galilee. We're not talking about the Negev. We're not talking about the other regions of the land of Israel. We're talking about specifically the areas in Judea that will witness the abomination of desolation. Now, after the altar has been shut down and the image has been set up, there's another prophecy that's supposed to take place. It turns out there will be men that will come up either side of the cold altar, and these are referred to as the two witnesses in the prophecy. We hear about them in the book of Revelation, chapter 11, 3 through 6, but we also hear about them in Zechariah 4, 11 through 14. And it says of them that they're going to testify and witness for 1,260 days. Let me also back up. You know, those guys that escaped, you know the miracle of the Red Sea in reverse, they're going to be delivered for 1,260 days also. Now, if they're the men that flee in Judea, and if the two witnesses are up testifying, and their period of time is 1,260 days, that's less than the 1,290 days for the whole Great Trib. What's that tell us? Well, that tells us that they get started a little later than this, like a month. So this event starts, and then 30 days later, these events happen. So when I mentioned to you about the difference between these two things, between the daily sacrifice stopped and the image being set up, we think there's about 30 days there. Why? Because the events that come on the heels of the image being set up, they're only preserved for 1,260 days. That's 30 days less than the 1,290 days for the Great Trib. So as you can see, this is the layout of what the chart tells us about it. I'll talk about some of the other things that happened at the other end when we get to the days after. But again, we're looking at the days leading into the Great Tribulation. So down here, we've got the false prophet. We have the beast comes to power, and he proceeds. And guess what the prophecy says for the anti-Messiah, how long he'll operate? He's going to operate for 42 months. And that's Revelation 13, verse 5. 42 months, that's a different unit of measure than days. And you should take note of that. Do not convert that 42 months into 1,260 days. Don't do it. Because every Hebrew month, if you have a whole string of Hebrew months, they're not always just 30 days. Even in the Zadok calendar, every 3 months, the day, the month has got that extra day, it's 31 days. So don't call it 1,260 days. It's not. It's 42 months. Use the unit of measure the prophecy gives us. So that means that obviously to do that, that means that the anti-Messiah actually comes to power not at the setting up of the image, but slightly into the days of the Great Tribulation. It's something you see at the start of the Great Tribulation, but it doesn't precede the Great Tribulation at all. It is something that happens in the early days of it. Well, there's something else that also takes place, and that has to do with another group of people called the 144,000. And we have a prophecy in Revelation in chapter 7 that tells us that there are 12,000 from each of the tribes that are listed, and they're going to be sealed for the Great Tribulation. And there's a clue given about their timing. It says that the angels that have to do with the harm of trees and grass and so forth, they are to hold off, don't start the judgment until they're sealed. So are they sealed immediately in this? Probably not. They might migrate into the first part, because the judgments about the harm that would come to trees and grass and so forth, those are the trumpet judgments in the book of Revelation. So we're going to get those going, and we got to get them ready to go. Now, there's another interesting passage here, and this is one that's rarely spoken of, and it has to do with 1 Peter 4:10 and Revelation 8:3-5. It turns out that at the start of the Great Tribulation, there's a whole bunch of people, believers, who don't believe this, will not believe that we're start of the Great Tribulation, that the abomination of desolation has started and so forth. I want you to imagine with me for a moment, these prophecies get fulfilled. We're all walking around telling everybody, hey, the Great Tribulation has started. We need to get ready. We're getting ready to be a part of this. And a lot of people are going to deny that. A lot of people are going to be opposed to it. They're going to object to it. They're going to argue that when the Jews set up that altar, that that was an abomination, not the shutting down of the altar. They're going to be exactly backwards of what God has warned and said. And the prophecy says that judgment comes first on the household of God. Before God ever begins to judge the world and by these judgments in the Great Tribulation, he's going to clean his own house. He's going to prep the 144,000 and seal them, and he's going to judge the rest of his house. And quite honestly, if you participate in the abomination of desolation, you're the ones that agreed with the shutting down of the altar. I hate to say this, but you're in deep trouble with God, because he's probably not going to have you continue to go on in the Great Tribulation, sowing even more rebellion amongst other believers during that period of time. God's going to clean house on his own house. So let me say this very clearly. The first judgment in the Great Tribulation from God is on believers for their unbelief. And this is consistent with what God has done with Israel in the past. Many times, this is consistent with what happened to them when they came out of Egypt. By the way, I would remind you that those people, that generation that came out of Egypt, they didn't make it in the promised land. They were judged for their unbelief, and they died in the wilderness. We're going to have the same scenario here, folks. And that's the reason why we need to understand this subject appropriately. That's the reason why we need to be trusting the Lord. with regard to all this and understand what he has said is his plan, we need to be in parallel with that plan. So let's also look at something else that's taking place. At the same time all of this is taking place, we know that since we're at the end of the age, that something else has to dramatically happen in the world, and it has to do with all of Israel that's scattered all over the world. Believers are scattered all over the world, and part of the Great Tribulation is the gathering of his saints. Part of it has to do with, because the Messiah, when he returns with all of his saints. So we've got to end the judgment of the exile that God put upon all of Israel and his people. And to do that, you go to the prophecies of Ezekiel 38 and 39, and in particular in Ezekiel 39, the prophecy explains how God explains why I judged you and sent you into exile, what my intention was to do, how I turned my face away with you, I didn't get to show compassion to you, but now the day's coming when I will show compassion toward you. I will end the exile. I will begin to bring you back. And in Ezekiel 39, as well as in Joel chapter 2, it says part of what that is God's going to pour out his spirit on the whole house of Israel, going to pour out his spirit upon mankind, so that all of us, are you ready for this, will be able to prophesy that the day of the Lord is coming. That's going to happen right at the start of the Great Tribulation too. Quite honestly, you cannot get through the Great Tribulation as a believer without the aid of the Holy Spirit, without having a solid relationship of trusting and believing in God. It's absolutely essential for that. If you're casual in your faith right now, you are totally unprepared for getting ready to go through the Great Tribulation, because when you go through the Great Tribulation, you don't have enough water. You don't have enough food. You don't have the ability to defend yourself or your family properly and completely. You cannot save yourself. You are going to be forced, literally, by God to learn to trust him for everything. God says something to the children of Israel when he led them through the wilderness out of Egypt in Deuteronomy chapter 8. He said, I suffered you to be thirsty. I suffered you to be hungry. I wanted to see what was in your heart, that you would learn that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. That's how a man lives. That lesson that was in the ancient Exodus is going to be the same lesson here at the end. By the way, let me go ahead and just tell you, these judgments that are going to fall, they mimic the judgments that was upon Egypt in the first Exodus. And oh, by the way, this whole business about how we're going to make it, the prophets say, it's another Exodus. We will escape by another Exodus. I refer to it as the greater Exodus. Jeremiah chapter 16 and Jeremiah 23 are two very common places where he said, the day is coming in these days. He says, where, when you use the word Exodus, you will not be referring to the story of ancient Egypt and the children of Israel coming out of there. You'll be referring to when God begins to gather up his people from all the nations of the world, from the north, the south, the east, and the west, and will begin to deliver them and take them to the promised land. Now, the final thing that we have down here is the prophecy also says that there's an apostasy that's coming, a great falling away of faith. And we also have one other time dimension prophecy. This is very intriguing that also starts here. And that's offered to us in Daniel chapter 8, verses 13 and verse 26. I'm only going to introduce it to you at the moment. In the next episode, I'm going to give you some detail. This is the prophecy in this whole thing that God and the Bible said is sealed until the end. Men have not known or understood this prophecy to this date. You will not hear anybody talking about the vision of the 2300 evenings and mornings in previous prophecy books. But on the next episode, I'm going to show you what that prophecy is and how it fits into the prophecy line, the prophetic line of the Great Tribulation. I'll see you in the next episode. Join me then.